This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere. Everywhere. At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. It's our weekly visit with Ryan Roland-Smith. Ryan, it was a great weekend. A great homestand for the Mariners. And look, they go 2-2 against Boston, but were every bit the match for the Red Sox. What did you learn about this team over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, that was walking into their toughest part of this schedule, I think, and especially at a crucial time of year. You got the trade deadline coming up. So this was the beginning of that tough schedule. And we all said at the end of June, if they can walk out of this at 500, they're still in an amazing spot. You know, unfortunately, the Astros just can't lose. But they look good. They really matched up well. And this is a tough team. The Red Sox, when you watch them and you pay attention to how their offense is constructed, they're really consistent, and there's not many holes in that offense, just like the Mariners, and they matched up really well. Again, you know, yesterday the wheels kind of came off early in that game with the, you know, two out hit walk and then the home run. But besides that, there was just a good energy in that building too. And even the Knights, even go back to Thursday, it wasn't a huge crowd, but there was a certain sound to that crowd, because if everyone's starting to catch on, and you can really feed off that as a player, you really can. So it was a good weekend, and it was just the beginning of this tough schedule. They're about to walk into Yankee Stadium in Fenway Park on the East Coast. That's going to be a real test.
You know, I think the most fascinating player to me, Ryan, has become Wade LeBlanc. Just because, you know, as he says, 86 miles an hour is his top, you know, fastball. The other day, 2 hits, 9 strikeouts. It was just amazing. And what do you think Jerry saw in him that, because, you know, he was talking about him a long time ago, and it certainly has played out the way that he's been pitching lately.
I think he talked about him a long time ago. When he was here a couple of years ago, he was a stopgap pitcher. He was a guy who could come in and fill a void in the middle innings and, you know, save some guys in the bullpen. That's not the kind of role you want to be. As a professional athlete, you don't want to be, you know, they call it in baseball a mop-up guy. That's how I got to the big leagues. I was a mop-up guy my first couple months. You don't want to be that guy. You want to be a key piece. And I think when he was here a couple of years ago, he came over from, I think it was the Blue Jays in AAA, where he was putting up really good numbers in AAA. Comes over and it was a stopgap piece. And he even came in, had some success, and then he started to wind down. And then, you know, next thing you know, he's DFA. Now, that was my first year really covering this team. And it was a heartbreaker because I put myself in those shoes thinking, man, this guy was dealing, has a couple rough ones. But when you look at him this year, he came in, they got him, there was a need there in the bullpen. Same kind of, you know, thought process is, this is a guy who can get some innings for us and, you know, give us an extra, you know, option in that starting rotation, because that was a big question mark. And this, the mindset that, and look, Wade LeBlanc is not going to communicate this, but deep down, you know that when he came and joined this team in spring training and the beginning of the year, he said, you know what, I'm going to pitch my way into this rotation. He might talk, you know, in his post-game shows and say, oh, you know, I'm just trying to help the team out, or I'm throwing 86, but, you know, when you watch him pitch, you know deep down that there is that belief that he has that he didn't have a couple of years ago, that he can go out and get 6-7 innings. And you're starting to notice too, even, again, the weekend was a little bit different, but the games prior to that, he'd get in a jam, and the conversations he would have in the dugout, he's sticking around. He's gone 5-6 innings now, as opposed to when he first got in that rotation, it was five and dive. But, man, it has been a lot of fun to watch. And you notice there was just no momentum, and there was no, you know, hit, panic, quality of pitch goes down, another hit, get in a jam. There was none of that the other day. There was, even when you made a mistake, he'd come right back with a really highly executed pitch, and there was just no chance for the Boston Red Sox to breathe. It was so fun to watch.
Well, Ryan, do you think this is sustainable with Wade LeBlanc? And I suppose it can be considered a dumb question, because he's done it now 8 or 9 starts in a row, and yet I would think there'd still be some questions, because this guy has been a journeyman, and yet maybe he's found himself now.
Yeah, you know, and it's not a dumb question at all, and I'm still questioning, is this sustainable? Is this something that, you know, a team's going to pay more attention to? You know, when you watch guys like, you know, Mitch Haniger, or, you know, Heredia, or young guys on this team, when they're starting to have some success, and all of a sudden they're, you know, talk about Mitch Haniger in particular, he's hitting, you know, 3-4 in the lineup. the microscope's put on you. All of a sudden, the scouting, there's more data, more scouting reports on you because you're a guy that they don't want to let, they don't want you to beat him. Now, Wade LeBlanc is a guy now, when you look at his numbers, people try and, you know, solve the, whatever the puzzle is. So there's going to be a bigger scouting report on him. So there's that. So again, sustainability, I think once a guy gets 15 to 20 starts and he's still doing this, then you can walk away and say, you know what, he's a guy. This is a guy for us. He's not quite there. He's on an amazing run right now. Hopefully he still does it. But the big test is coming up this week. They go into Yankee Stadium and they go into Fenway Park. And I don't care. Those teams are both killing it right now, having a ton of success. I don't care, even if they're not having success pitching in those places, there's just a different aura in those places. And when you're a young guy like Marco Gonzalez, we're going to see him tomorrow, or Wade LeBlanc, who's really trying to prove that he can be sustainable and answer your question, Jim, that a lot of other people have, the real test is going to be pitching on that East Coast when there's that different feel inside that ballpark. And so when they walk out, that's a question that, you know, we can come back to, especially after this week.
Talking to Ryan Roland-Smith, our weekly visit. Ryan, we kicked around a couple different questions about the Mariners to start this show. One of them was, if you were going to give a first-half MVP, who's the leading candidate for that? And I think the two top guys are Haniger or Gene Segura. In your mind, who's been the most valuable player for the Mariners through this first half of the season?
I think numbers-wise, Gene Segura, without question. You know, when you look at that on paper, you look at him and say he needs to be an all-star. Hopefully people are out voting for him. He's definitely... numbers-wise, the most productive player. But, right, if you want to dig a little bit further into it, Marco Gonzalez and Wade LeBlanc are two guys that the big question mark coming into this season was the starting rotation. And you look at what they've done and how they've sustained up to this point and the adjustments they've made. That's been the difference. When you've got those games, when you've got your third, fourth, and fifth guy getting you into that sixth and seventh and eighth inning with one or two runs, giving you a chance to win, that's how you are 20-something games over 500 because of those guys. So the most valuable player, in my opinion, is some of those guys in the middle of that rotation. But again, you know, when I can't walk away from Gene Segura and the numbers he's put up and, you know, the runners in scoring position numbers and everything else. He's been amazing.
One of the things, you bring up Marco Gonzalez. I'm surprised at his strikeouts. It seems like his strikeouts have climbed up, and that's something we haven't seen before. What do you attribute that to?
I think when I look at the at-bats where he's in a position to strike a guy out, he's pitching backwards a little bit. You'll notice a lot tomorrow when he's pitching, a lot of 0-0 breaking balls, starting guys off with curveballs. He's gotten so much more confidence now with that breaking ball. It's got a lot more depth, and it's just setting up his ability to throw that. He calls it a backdoor cutter, but usually, you know, it's kind of middle in and up in the zone. But he's attacking guys more with two strikes. He's out of that mindset of, you know what, my stuff is, you know, mediocre, or I have to create contact. He's now in the position where, man, I got two strikes. I'm going to go for the strikeout, even with a runner on first base, right? Everyone talks about, you know, try and get the guy hit into a double play or whatever. I'm telling you right now, that's a lot easier said than done. When I was pitching, when I was doing really well, I'd never had that mindset. I had the mindset like, you know what, I got two strikes, I'm putting you away. He has that now because he just has that confidence, and I think that stems from the breaking ball, able to throw that for a strike early, and it just gets these guys off balance. He's noticing and recognizing worse swings later in the count, and then he's attacking guys. And I think that's got a lot to do with it, and then you're going to see those strikeout numbers go up.
Hey, Ryan, how about Executive of the Year and Manager of the Year? If you look at just, I feel like Jerry Dipoto, definitely. I mean, some of these moves that he has made just, and, you know, Billy Beanes won the award, Walt Jocketty, you know, guys like that. What do you think, who do you think has the better chance between Service and DePoto of winning Manager of the Year or Executive of the Year?
Well, that's a good question. And I haven't thought about it as far as, I think one of them definitely, if they sustain this and they're even close to where they're at in this position of the year, where at the top of the AL West, one of those guys need to get some kind of recognition because it's pretty amazing what they've done, especially two of the injuries as well. You know what? I'm a former player, so I always look on the side of the in-house, the guys down the dugout, and I look at Scott Service and see how he's able to, you know, you got the Robinson Cano situation, some of the injuries, and just having, you know, these guys buy into what he's doing. Having these the bullpen guys listen to DeLunas down the, in the bullpen, that's been huge. Having Mel Stottlemyre take over and say, you know what, we're going to work on this pitch and that pitch, and this is the count. And even with Felix, how he's slowly starting to buy into that. So I think that's a huge part for me. Again, though, Jerry Dipoto, you know, he's I feel like he's kind of tapered off. He hasn't had to make as many moves as he had in the past. But some of the – now when you're looking at it, the Segura-Haniger trade, I mean, I think about that every single time I watch Mitch Haniger walk up to the plate. I'm like, man, what – that's and nothing against Taiwan Walker. He's and I wish him all the best. But when you look at that, you go, man, the Mariners killed it on that trade. That was – again, that was – you know, it wasn't too recent. But when you look at what he's done and the position they're in, this is a young team overall. When you look at the core players, Mike Zunino, Mitch Haniger, Heredia – guys like that, it's a young team. Edwin Diaz. So this is a core of guys who are pitching in and playing in big situations now that you know, next year and the year after they're going to be around. And that's huge. So that's a good question. I'd have to go Scott Servais, but yeah. Both these guys need to be recognized for sure.
Who would you take in that? Because it's a great it is a great question. Between the guy who assembled the parts and made these trades and picked up Leak and Gonzalez – or the managers yeah. kind of put it together.
Well, and being an ex-player, I kind of tend to go the way of as Ryan, you know, mm-hmm. thinking about you're the one that puts him to work. But I don't know, man. I just think that, you know, those guys weren't established type of players. I mean, Haniger was a mystery. Yeah. You know, look, Segura was – his career was going up and down. And, you know, whatever he saw in LeBlanc, I mean, yeah, I got to go with – I have to go with Dipoto on this one.
Yeah, because I think of the two guys, Leak and Gonzalez. When they traded for both of those guys, Ryan, kind of the yeah. I know my reaction was, hey, are you going to win and get into the playoffs taking the leftovers from the St. Louis Cardinals staff right. and guys that don't really throw that hard? And both, I mean, Leak had a tough inning yesterday, but Leak and Gonzalez have been great.
Both of them have been yeah. awesome. Absolutely. I'm just looking at it, you know, in the sense of there's a lot of things and you know, that go on, and Dave can I'm sure it's the same as, I'm sure it's 10 times this in football, but in that locker room and you know, with the when you're traveling as a unit, everything has to click, and that's massive. I think I had 5 different managers in my time here, and you just kind of observe as a player, how would they lead this team? There's so much going on under the surface with a team, whether they're doing good or bad, that we just don't know about. And when you look at these guys, when they're walking around, when they walk out of that clubhouse in the dugout and the energy they have, there's a lot to be said for that. So I'm looking at it from that point of view. But again, you know, Jerry Dipoto, you know, has done some amazing things. And you mentioned Mike Leake too. I mean, that's another one more recent. Pretty amazing what he's done again, after that hiccup he had.
Yeah, and then some of the pieces they traded away looked bad last year, but now like Trumbo's struggling a little bit this year. He hasn't been healthy with the Orioles. He's only got 4 home runs, and whereas the year after they traded him, he exploded.
A ton of bombs. We've got a backup catcher in Steve Clevenger.
Yeah, and then same thing with Chris Taylor, and he was very open about those, and you know, and then unfortunately, and I'm sure Taiwan Walker is still going to have a great career, but he did get the Tommy John surgery, yeah. So. That kind of helps it a little bit. I know that's the negative side of it, but yeah. At least the pieces that you traded away so far anyway, Tyler O'Neill, you know, who's the kid, Andrew Moore, that they, you know, sent yeah. down to Tampa Bay, at least they're not out there killing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's a heartbreak. And you're also going to wonder, how do these guys fit? You know, like a Trumbo, for example, how would he fit, first of all, in the lineup? Second of all, and I don't even know what he's doing this year as far as numbers. I know he did some good things last year, but how do they fit into this team, their personality? I play with Trumbo over the D-backs, and, you know, great guy, but how does he fit into this chemistry that they have? You know, and you know, there's a lot of this stuff that goes on, you know, behind the scenes that we just don't see as well, and they kind of recognize and maybe talk to players and say, look, you know, is this guy clicking, or, you know, what do you got on this and that? And that communication really comes down to Scott Servais as well. How well he can deliver that message, how the players feel about certain guys inside the clubhouse.
Hey, Ryan, you still think they're going to go after a starter? I hear a lot of guys, John Clayton was talking about it, Bob Gross and Tom today about Jay Happ from Toronto, and yet Gross was saying, be careful what you're doing here, because who do you replace in that rotation? Maybe if there's an injury, like, you don't want to mess up the mojo with what you have going right now.
That's a good point, and this is something we talked about a week ago. And who do you replace? And how do you sort of structure this, or how do you weave these guys in? And that's a great point. I think, you know, I heard the things about Jay Happ, and the biggest thing for me is just the health part of it. I just don't want to see someone come in that has having some success, and then all of a sudden there's a health issue a month in. I think the big thing for them, if they are, I'd love to see him go after a starting pitcher. And I think when it comes down to it, who does he replace? You bring him in, make him have a start, and then you work around, you know, whether you've got days off or how you want to work it, who's doing what at that time, and then you figure out who are going to be your five guys and weave him in somehow. Because I'm telling you right now, if they do get to the playoffs, and I think they will get to the playoffs, first of all, if they're in that wild card game, you really wanted to time up perfectly with James Paxton. But if you do go get that trade piece, you do have that option where you can mix and match and make sure that trade option, that stud you got, can time it up for that wild card game. And then if you get to that first round, you have to have those three guys that are a presence. Three guys, someone with some playoff experience, someone who is going to 5th, 6th, 7th inning be an absolute lights out pitcher, and 110 pitches in, no health issues. That's going to be key, and that's the biggest reasoning behind that. When I talk about going out and getting a starting pitcher, easier said than done, but I'd still like to see him do that.
Ryan, if the playoffs started right now, who do you think the three would be on the Mariners staff?
I would go Paxton, Marco Gonzalez, not in this order. Marco Gonzalez, Paxton, and Mike Leake, the first three. And then Felix would have game four or game five, and then I get a Wade LeBlanc in there as well.
Ryan Roland Smith is with us. Two things. Ryan, I saw you tweet out this weekend about the Solstice Parade, which I thought was quite cute.
The what?
The Solstice Parade down in Fremont, where they have naked bikers. Remember, we talked to Ryan because he had the Lime bike, the electric bike.
Yeah. The people that are naked are always the ones you don't want to see naked, right?
True.
It's like when you go to the nude beach, it's like,
I'll be honest.
You know.
Look, this was Amanda, my wife. She's like, I have to see that parade. I have to see it. And this is like 2 years in the making. And I somehow, you know, got out of it somehow. But I was like, all right, let's do it. So down we go. And I got to admit, I was expecting the people you don't want to see with body paint on.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you what, it was a lot of young people having a blast. It wasn't as crazy as I thought it was going to be. It was literally 5-10 minutes, but I had to get a photo and put the at Lime bike and send it off to Danny. Because I was on a Lime bike, by the way.
You were? That's great.
Serious. Of course I was.
That's fantastic. The second thing is that I was in California over this weekend, and a shark washed up on the beach just south of where my mom lives. And you being an Australian, you guys are familiar with sharks. I describe it as I am very rationally afraid of sharks. I don't know if I'm ever going to get in the water again.
Yeah, and look, and I'll tell you this story, and this is, I'm sure I've told this before. When I was 12, 13, when I was growing up in Australia, I grew up on the beach, right? We would swim, you know, 200 yards out and wouldn't care, wouldn't even think about sharks. And yeah, okay, everyone talking about if you spot a shark, awesome. I never saw a shark in my life. Come over, I play rookie ball as an 18-year-old, and I'm just around all these guys have never even seen the ocean, and they're watching Shark Week, and they're like, Australia, you guys must have so many sharks. How do you go in the water, this and that? I went back that off-season terrified to go in the water, thanks to these Americans. I couldn't believe it. You ruined it for me. And I'm trying to go surfing, and I got my fingertips in the water. I didn't want to put my arms in.
Yeah, we got Sharknado here.
Exactly.
We got Shark Week.
Yeah. It's exactly. Terrifying. I'll tell you, I saw it. I walked down to the beach on Saturday, and there was a sign up that said, hey, a shark was spotted at this beach a day ago. Yesterday, there's these clips, and it's like an 8-foot great white shark with these big, massive teeth that washed up on the shore a mile south of where I was. Like, this is terrifying. It was absolutely. I don't know if I'm ever going to get back in.
Yeah, we have some big ones in Australia, that's for sure. But look, what do they say? You got more chance of being struck by lightning or abducted by alien? It was one of those silly stats to get before you get eaten by a shark.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. My nephew tried to give me one about like 83% of all shark attacks are not lethal, and I'm like, that doesn't sound great. I don't want a non-lethal shark attack either. That sounds horrific.
Yeah,
and
just lose a limb, no worries. Yeah, that's fine. Let's do it.
All right, Ryan, it's always fun to catch up with you. This is going to be a really exciting week with the Mariners headed back east. Thanks so much, man.
Of course. Anytime, guys.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frostbrug Coors Light. We got the Sharks. We got Wade LeBlanc. We got the question of how the Mariners have gotten this far. Who do you credit more? Is it Jerry DePoto? Is it Scott Servais? We'll discuss that next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and more. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It is a 5 o'clock refresh. Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Lights. Dave, you've taken a look at the shark that washed up on the beach just south of my mom's house in Aptos, California. You would agree it's intimidating and fearsome and kind of scary.
It's a nasty thing. To me, like, you know, I'll whoop a bear. I have no problem with that. Just joking.
You'd take your chances with a bear over a shark, though.
Absolutely. I mean, you're in the water. You have no... You're out of your element. I can't imagine a more horrifying thing. I went scuba diving one time in Hawaii with Brian Bosworth, and they said, you know, they put their hand up on their forehead to indicate shark. And at one point, the guy who was leading us in these caves and stuff turns around and does the shark sign. And all of a sudden, I kind of panicked. Like, I had to talk myself back into, because you feel entirely vulnerable down there. And the shark that's his realm, man. And that just
did you turn around?
No, we just kept going, and then finally we got to a place where there was a cave. There was oxygen in there. You could go up and talk inside this little cave. And he said, "Oh, I just was indicating that you might watch out for it here." And I'm like, "Don't do that again, okay?"
It was beyond alert for this, and you were like, "I thought it was shark alert."
Yeah, I almost had an accident. So anyway, that shark scared the heck out of me. And that thing is creepy. And this person laying next to it, it's like, that's not funny.
It's okay? Not funny.
It could swallow you whole.
Yeah, there's no way I would lay down next to a dead shark for fear that, A, it would be a zombie shark that would come back to life. B,
he fears zombies and sharks.
I would not want other sharks to hear that I had laid down next to their brother to mock its demise and take it personally.
Yeah, well, so you won't get in the water again?
No, I'm sure I will.
But yeah, I've
always gotten in the water. Like, I love going to the beach. I love being in the water. I love being on boogie boards. Every time I get in the water, I think, though, where is it? Like, I will always think that in my head.
Do you?
Where is it? Yes!
I always feel like it's pretty safe. You know, they monitor all that at least some of the beaches down there in California.
Yeah, right. Like, why do you think they monitor it? They've got them tagged?
Well, when was the last time you heard somebody getting eaten by a shark at Malibu or something like that?
Well, they're generally not that far down. You don't want to talk to me about this. Because in Santa Cruz, where the water's colder, there's actually a little triangle that goes up to Onion Nuevo Island, then down to about Davenport. There's a guy who got his arm chomped off when I was in high school there on a day that I was in the water.
Yeah, I don't care what they say about, struck by lightning, the chances of that. No, I'm always going to be afraid.
Yeah. That will be there.
In the ocean.
All right, we're going to get to the Mariners now. Mariners going 2-2 over the weekend against the Boston Red Sox. I could spend the entire show talking about sharks and how rationally afraid of them that I are.
Isn't this the time
that I
are? Or is.
Isn't this the time of year when Sharknado comes out?
Apparently, yeah. And I always think every week is Shark Week. Like, hey, it's Shark Week. Yeah, that's just National Geographic programming.
The most amazing thing is that girl down in Australia who lost her arm and then continued to
surf. Yeah, pretty awesome.
Yes. She's like, that was my one. I'm not due anymore. Yeah. I'm due to not be attacked by sharks for the rest of my life. They'll be there. The Mariners go 2-2 against the Red Sox. They go 5-2 over their homestand. They get the day off to travel today. They'll begin a 3-game series against the Yankees, 3 more games against the Red Sox. They'll wrap up that series in Baltimore. They're approaching the halfway point. They are the biggest surprise in baseball. Who's most responsible for that? If you had to divide sort of the chart and you've got 100% of the credit, what division do you go between Scott Service and Jerry DePoto, the manager who has sort of steered the ship and kept it stable in spite of the injuries and the uncertainty and all of the different things that have gone on the suspension? Or do you put the guy that's put the parts together, Jerry DePoto? What division do you look at in divvying up credit? You can text into 710-710, powered by Coors Light.
Yeah, whatever you choose, I think it should be like 51-49. I mean, it's really close, really close. But I go with DePoto just because I think about Wade LeBlanc. I compared him to Richard Sherman earlier in that, you just find kind of this diamond in the rough and have the imagination to sign him and see what he can be. And I think identifying that kind of talent, and identifying Mitch Haniger, because I remember, I think it was DePoto, he was talking about what a great deal that was of getting Haniger. Well, he came along with the Segura trade, and they traded away two pretty big pieces in Ketel Marte and Taijuan Walker at that time. So just the trades that he's done, and you had the quiz show earlier, Danny, with who has Jerry Dipoto signed, and it's a lot of really key pieces like Marco Gonzalez.
I do want to clarify too. Guillermo Heredia is one of the players that he acquired.
Yes, you heard it from the text.
Yeah, unending criticism from the text toy. Yeah. And a member of this show over how that might have thrown off the entire quiz.
It could have. Which member was that?
You.
Oh, it was me.
Yeah.
It was me.
The hater.
Yeah, I just like
I heart haters.
It's kind of funny. I like giving you a hard time about the contest, but I always enjoy them. And I don't want to go too far because I know I'll be in charge of the next contest if I go too far. Can you imagine me in charge of a contest? What a fiasco that'd be?
Yeah, I just think of it like kind of, it's the guy from In the Balcony on The Muppet Show. Where it's like, I remember when they did this quiz show last week. He's always come out.
Yeah, well, I don't know how I'd...
Waldorf, I think, is one of those guys' name.
All right, who do you got? DePoto,
I'm going with
Scott
Service. I love Scott Service and what he's done. I understand that, and there was a good point made on the Coors Light text line by one of the listeners saying, well, wait a minute, DePoto was the one who hired Scott Service, and... Right. And boy, talk about a great move there, because I remember when Service was hired, I thought, well, there are two things. I thought, man, I can't believe they hired a guy who's never managed at any level. I wonder how he's going to do. And then I heard he wasn't that great with the media, too, and I was wrong on both accounts.
Scott Service deserves a lot of credit for a number of things. One of the things is that I think he's changed, in some ways, sort of his forward-facing personality, which I would have said before he started that you can't really do that. That you've got to be who you are. And Scott was seen when he was a player as a real hard grinder and someone who wasn't the most fun to be around, someone who was pretty demanding and serious and could be, he wasn't the warmest personality. And as a manager, I think that he's been incredibly, like, all of the different traits that he's shown about sort of an ability to kind of laugh and joke, to sort of weather the storms that go through a season. I think his performance as a manager has been the exact 180 degrees from what people thought he would be as a manager, people that had been around him in the game. And he deserves some credit for that, because I do think that he has I would give more credit to DePoto just because of the starting pitching that he's acquired. But the best thing that Scott Service has done as the manager this year is they've suffered a suspension to their best hitter. They've suffered injuries. D. Gordon's been on the DL. Nelson Cruz has been on the DL. I mean, all the different weird injuries that they've had. And he's kind of weathered through all of that and kept them without ever really going into a prolonged slump.
Yeah, and you know, think about this. We found this out on Friday out at Edgar's. We interviewed Nelson Cruz. He's best friends on the team with Kyle Seager. You know, he's bringing everybody together. And Kyle Seager has been here for a long time. But, you know, they're both family men, but from different parts of the world. And so I think the fact that he's getting that chemistry going and everybody's enjoying being around each other. And I think it's helping them win games. I mean, you seriously have to have a pretty strong consideration for Scott Service as maybe being the most important part.
Yeah, he's the pool table guy. He's the one that had the idea of bringing the pool table down there to the clubhouse in Peoria, having the question and answer, getting somebody up. And they probably do this with other teams too, but I just like the whole culture that he's created there. He's always checking in with his players. Again, other managers probably do that too, but... He just seems like a guy that I'd like to play for, and I think a lot of those guys feel that way, and they all, Dave, as you mentioned, that's the thing. I mean, they're just, as a collective group, they're better than they are individually. I look at them, and you can still see some flaws with the Mariners. They're not quite as good as perhaps the Yankees and certainly the Astros, but, boy, they've sure been playing well so far.
It's Danny David Moore. We will keep this conversation going. You got an opinion? Who's more responsible? 206-421-3776. Is it the manager, Scott Service, the culture that he's built? Is it the GM, the deals that he's made? Who's more responsible for the Mariners' success this year? We'll keep that going next.
This is Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
5 o'clock refresh. Brought to you by Ross Brew Coors Light from the 360. The question... we're asking is, who's more responsible, Service or DePoto, is akin to, which do you like more, water or oxygen? They are equally vital. The trades, Segura, Haniger, and some recent moves give me a slight tip to DePoto, but in truth, a dead tie. Service has fundamentally changed the vibe. And you're right about that. Like, the best teams, those two work hand in hand. The manager isn't criticizing the parts that he's given. The GM isn't criticizing the way the parts he acquired are used and deployed. You're able to get that. When you're with the Mariners, though, and those two guys were kind of bonded together when they started, where Service was the manager DePoto picked, and forget, Jim, you brought it up, that Service had not managed before. He'd not been an everyday manager before. That's not something that was in it. That we've seen both sides of it, and it's probably had some struggles along the way in both regards, to come out on the other end where they are working really well together now. I was really, when Nelson Cruz told us last Friday that you could tell that Scott Service was more relaxed this year, I thought that was really telling. I thought that was really a significant point he made, that Scott Service kind of found his confidence and his groove this year.
Well, you can understand why, for him and Jerry DePoto both. And I thought Jerry was kind of stressed out during camp. When we were down there, you know, he might have known about the Cano thing, right, at that point, and coming into his last year, and it was go time. But yeah, it's I think here's the thing I find interesting with Service, and I just a little side note that I was this way as well as a player. And like Brian Habib is a guy that I noticed, and he probably noticed it in me. Brian Habib was a guard from University of Washington, and he ended up signing a free agent contract with the Broncos, and he was prickly. We'll say that. Say it that way. Like he was always kind of pissed off and angry and sort of edgy and everything. And now that he's retired from the game, like, he's the sweetest guy in the world. He loves it. And I think Service, you know, that description of him, it reminded me of that. And you like that he has that kind of fire in him. And so, and the guys can relate to it, you know. So what is it with catchers in the Major League Baseball? It seems like they typically, it's kind of like backup quarterback in the NFL, that they end up running teams.
Yeah, people would say, I guess, that the catchers, they're the one guy on the field that sees everything.
See everything, yeah.
They handle the pitchers.
So yeah. you get a sense for that and how it all comes together. They've got they're a mesh point for a lot of different things.
Yeah, you know, the two guys we're talking about, it seems, at what point are we thinking this is really crazy that they're in the last year of their contract, and how much longer is this going to go? Originally, earlier on in April or March, whatever, in spring, I was thinking, okay, let's just see how this year goes. But now we're almost to the halfway point of the season, and clearly the Mariners are probably going to win 90 games. Even if they fall back a little bit, it looks like a 90-win team, and 90 wins would be good enough to get another contract extension for both of these guys.
Didn't you tell John Stanton the other day that you should just come on our show and announce
Jim,
that he's
Jim
extending?
Tried to get the extensions announced
before it had actually been negotiated
or even considered.
I would have preferred if you hadn't said that on the air publicly.
What?
Yeah. I mean, that's going too far behind the curtain, because I really wanted Stanton to come on the air and do something, and I didn't want to reveal that I was begging him for a scoop.
Oh,
I wanted it to be like, man, Moore, he still got it. He was still working and still, you know,
Jim,
nobody believes
that.
Yeah,
nobody,
but instead I was basically begging John Stanton, you know, hey, look, you know, I haven't had a scoop in a while. It'd be nice if you announced it on the show.
And
he laughed it off, to his credit.
Yeah, well, and he said, I might want to let some other people know first before I do this. But he's the best. He's always welcome on our show.
He is.
He's
really great. I would say this, that I'm completely ready for both guys and think both guys should be extended. A month ago, I would have been more convinced about Service than DePoto between the two, that I liked the job Service did as the manager, where I still had some questions about how it was going to work out, Jerry's moves. Not that I didn't want him to continue or would want to change, but I think the thing that's changed most for me in the past month with Jerry DePoto and the moves that he's made is the reason why they're winning, and the fact that he's found value from starting pitchers. That's just such a hard thing to do. Like, you look across the game right now, and basically, unless you're willing to pony a huge amount of money up like the Astros were to acquire both Verlander and Gerrit Cole, acquiring front-end starting pitchers is one of the toughest things that you can do. And he's found a couple of them. And not only that, but he took one that he had in Taijuan Walker and kind of correctly evaluated the potential and said, I think we can get that pitching from other places and use this guy to get a couple of great hitters in Gene Segura, who was an all-star, and Mitch Haniger, who should be an all-star. I'm so impressed with what he's done. And then, Dave, as you pointed out, throw Wade LeBlanc in there too. Like, Wade LeBlanc is someone that that's not an accident. This wasn't somebody that, oh my gosh, we need to go get somebody and here's Wade LeBlanc. LeBlanc's a guy that they went out and got a couple years ago and somebody that Jerry's had before and had respect for. The way Jerry's been able to find value in starting pitching should be the number one thing that Mariner fans look at and say, this is the guy who knows how to not just accurately evaluate talent, but to find value.
Yeah, and especially if you saw what Wade LeBlanc did on Saturday, the game that I couldn't find on TV for some reason. Man, Jerry saw that coming, right? I mean, he saw that whole thing coming.
Your inability to find it on Facebook or believing it was on Facebook?
No, I was talking about Jerry DePoto, but yeah, I couldn't find the game that was on, was it on Fox?
No, I thought that Jerry saw your inability to find it on Facebook coming.
Yeah.
He was aware of your...
You don't need a GM to find that, Danny. But anyway, I'm very impressed by what he's... I think Wade LeBlanc sort of... I always say this about John Schneider compared to football, that Richard Sherman, I thought, was maybe the best find that he had. I mean, to be that good in the fifth round.
Over Russell?
Yeah, that's a good one, too. He was third round. And I don't know, there's something about fifth round, I guess, that I think is a little bit different. But he would tell you if he was a genius, he would have picked him in the first round, right? No, actually, he would draft him in the fifth round because he wouldn't have to do that. But I just finding a guy like Wade LeBlanc, I just remember when Jerry brought it up, I was like, what are you talking about? Wade LeBlanc? You know, and we knew about his fastball was topping out in the high 80s. And, you know, what is it about this guy? And if you saw the game the other day or read the box score, as I had to do, pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. 9 strikeouts, 0 walks, 2 hits, over 7.5 or 7 2/3 innings. It's unbelievable.
Retiring 22 batters in a row, Wade LeBlanc. And, it is amazing. But, yeah, you go back, Danny, to Leake and Gonzalez when they came in, and then in April comments that DePoto made about, I want to go with these younger guys. I want to go with the guys that are here. He didn't want to go after Cobb and Lynn and these other pitchers that were available. And I remember thinking, well, okay, you're in the last year of your contract. This is a big gamble you're taking here with these guys. And yet it's proved to be the right way to go. And you look at, not only is it the right way to go for this year, but now you're looking at a rotation that is going to be good for years to come. Or you have parts that'll be good for years to come. Whereas going into the season, I thought, man, that rotation, I thought they were going to go 81 and 81 because of the rotation. I like the rest of the team, but I thought the 5 starters were going to let them down. And now it's been one of the strengths of the team.
His career ERA, Wade LeBlanc, 4.23. He's 2.63. 2.63.
Is fantastic what he's been able to do, and he'll be on the mound as part of this road trip that gets underway tomorrow. The Huskies and Oregon State are underway in the College Baseball World Series. That game had been delayed due to weather. But they are taking it. That's a loser out game, which when I covered high school sports, I used to describe as the two sweetest words in sports coverage. Loser out.
Loser out?
All tied up right now, by the way.
Because you start to thin the field, cull the herd. Like, you narrow it down. Like, these people go forever. Like, loser out. Also guaranteed that you're going to have some kids crying. It was good scene.
Well,
good
color. That's harsh.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah, you try going through 3 months of covering high school baseball and see if you don't get a little cynical. It's Danny David Moore. The score is tied between Washington and Oregon State. We got the professor, John Clayton, joining us next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It is time to find out what we learned, brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
You're getting later and later on that.
No, not when I pulled down. Yeah. It's different. It's like a semi-horn.
Burp, burp. All aboard, Dave.
You're starting to thin out.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, he doesn't like compliments about his weight, though.
That's exactly right. I don't.
Why wouldn't you like that?
I don't really care. No one cares. No one but me cares.
I care.
Oh,
why?
I care.
How many pounds
too,
have you lost?
We're
Come
not
on.
Do that. This is not the Brock and Salk show. We don't fixate on other men's
All
weight.
All right, I'll just guess
doing.
It. I'm guessing you've lost at least 20.
I have no idea.
Yeah, probably 20.
Well, moving
over under 20.
Here's a smooth transition. Today we learned about self-serve butter.
Yeah, you like the way they've got self-serve butter for the popcorn at theaters now, too?
Oh, do they?
Yeah. There at Factoria. I mean, you can go a little far with that one. All right, Professor, what's the over-under for, what? I don't know why. I sit there and I go, okay, one squirt, two squirt. Okay, stop, Jim. So anyway, okay, Professor.
Oh, we got an over-under question. Here we go.
We do. We have an over-under question.
How many squirts of butter do you put on your popcorn, Professor?
I usually never get it to a movie, so I don't get many chances to put the squirts on there.
Okay.
You don't want squirts on your popcorn.
If you're tuning in right there, trying to hear the professor talk about the NFL and you heard that phrase.
Yeah, we learned nothing. I don't know why I brought up popcorn, but you know, during the Ryan Roland Smith interview that we taped before the show and we ran at 5 o'clock, I was actually bought popcorn down there at the Peach.
Did you really?
Yeah. It's the kind that's in the bag, though, and...
White cheddar?
Yeah. No, I just got the regular, the original. Ooh. In the green and white bag.
Yeah. The thing I liked most was when Jim was talking about the butter you can put on your own popcorn. It sounded like it was the advent, like the high point of civilization. It's like we've reached the point in America this year, 2018, Anno Domini, that you can apply your own butter topping to your popcorn.
Yeah, it goes back to that all-you-can-eat thing that I have, though. You know when they used to have a bunch of all-you-can-eat places?
Mm-hmm. Like the berry bowl.
It's like when I go to the yogurt place, I can't stop myself. Because I'm always, like, getting those little samples and then just, yeah, I get out of control that way.
I told my mom about how you guys each day at some point will compare different things that you've consumed and how terrible it made you feel, as if it were some sort of, like, cross that you're bearing.
It was like, it's something that just happened.
Chris, all of a sudden,
I know,
but you should have seen me. Like, all of a sudden, I'm there in the ice cream, and there's like four scoops that I'm putting in there. I just felt terrible afterwards.
Well, it's crazy. I'll remind myself how poorly I slept and then go, don't do that the next night. What am I doing the next night? The same thing.
Yeah, you're at the trough again.
Moving on, we also learned with Ryan Roland Smith all about sharks.
You guys are familiar with sharks. Okay. I describe it as I am very rationally afraid of sharks. I don't know if I'm ever going to get in the water again.
Yeah, and look, and I'll tell you this story, and this is, I'm sure I've told this before. When I was 12, 13, when I was growing up in Australia, I grew up on the beach, right? We would swim, you know, 200 yards out and wouldn't care, wouldn't even think about sharks. And yeah, okay, everyone talking about if you spot a shark, awesome. I never saw a shark in my life. Come over, I play rookie ball as an 18-year-old. And I'm just around all these guys have never even seen the ocean, and they're watching Shark Week, and they're like, Australia, you guys must have so many sharks. How do you go in the water, this and that? I went back that off-season terrified to go in the water, thanks to these Americans. I couldn't believe it. You ruined it for me. And I'm trying to go surfing, and I got my fingertips in the water. I didn't want to put my arms in.
Damn Americans.
I think what did it for me, and I can remember which class I was in. It was Mr. Curtis, he taught chemistry class. We saw, and I don't know why he was showing it to us in chemistry class, but we saw what a seal looks like from below and what a dude paddling on a surfboard looks like from below. If you're a shark, you wouldn't make the difference. You'd be like, hey, that looks like my
really?
Food source. Yes.
Well, I was like 10 years old when Jaws came out, and we saw that one at the theater. And so anybody in my age group pretty much was ruined by that movie.
Yeah. So like Jaws is for you like what Alien is for me. I can't watch Alien.
Oh, really?
Alien's terrifying, yeah.
Man, I used to do exactly what Ryan was saying. Like, I swim way past the break. I lifeguarded all throughout high school and college and just hang out there in the water and didn't think twice about it. Sometimes you get like a bluefish would swim past you and those can be pretty big and you'd be like, oh, a bluefish. You would never think, oh, that might have been a shark.
Shark with its doll's eyes.
Doll's eyes.
Doll's eyes.
What about, do the bottom feeders bother you, the crabs getting pinched?
Yeah. No.
Oh, yeah.
That never bothered me. Crustaceans, what are they going to do? Knock them from underneath like Super Mario.
That's what we were talking about, like the noodling, the guys that stick the hand in the mud bank and get catfish.
Yeah.
I can't do anything under in the water that you either step on or whatever. Yeah, it creeps me out. Couldn't do it.
Yeah, that was a big thing on Long Island, getting pinched by crabs. There were tons of them in the water. But you just kind of always float, you know, like even if you're in a foot of water, you don't touch the bottom. That kind of thing. Finally today, to bring this thing home, we learned about barf.
Terrible. Don't you hate throwing up?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can feel better once you're done, though.
I do less of it now that I stopped drinking.
Yeah.
Which is really a thorn in Jim's side for some reason.
That's a personal goal of mine, but
to throw up?
No, to get you drinking again. Sorry, I know that everybody commends people when they stop, but I'm not commending you. I want you back.
I want you back.
It's so wrong. I know that's wrong what I'm saying to Danny, but I just want to have a beer with him again.
You know, here it is. I want to say this. It makes me feel wanted. Like, I feel missed. Like, I was like, that's really sweet that Jim feels that way. Like, because if Jim was like, yeah, who really cares? Like, he was actually kind of a jackass. Like, it's better now for everybody.
I think it's definitely working for you if you can laugh about it, Danny. Because Jim's evil.
I mean, you've proved it. You've gone a year. You've gone more than a year. That's enough.
Enough
that's
already.
That's enough.
You're showing off.
Stop.
And I might actually feel better about everything. Yeah, no, it's been progress. Want to thank everybody for listening today. Ryan Roland-Smith for joining us. Jessamyn McIntyre for putting this all together. Curtis Rogers for executing on the board and correcting my mistake about Guillermo Heredia. And it did not affect the outcome, but we all regret that moment. Thank you guys for listening.
Not me.
Mariners baseball coming up the rest of the week. We're going to be back on Thursday after they play the Yankees. Let's go, M's. Let's take a bite out of the Big Apple. Thanks for listening. Danny Davenport.